Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you would like to ask any questions or maybe give us a show suggestion, you can contact us at ReverseThieves.com. And we now have a Discord, don't we, Kate?
Yeah, so after Otakon, I actually set up a Discord for Reverse Thieves, and you can get to it from the Reverse Thieves website. I also have it on my Twitter. But you know, the invite is there. Please come check it out. I posted a bunch of pictures from Otakon there, and we'll use it to, you know, let you know when we're recording in case you want to ask us a question or have questions about the episode that you listened to or feedback about it. I'm trying to bring us into the, you know, the next century, right? People don't email. I was having a conversation at work with, because we have like an author that's very, very young. And it was about how like the editor was communicating with her. And like, she like won't respond to emails because like, she's just not used to it. And so she'll just like send voice recorded texts to the editor of like thoughts. And it's like, oh my God, this is so weird. But it made me think about how, you know, people don't leave a lot of comments on blogs anymore, or, you know, people talk on social media or they talk on Discord. So we're doing this thing. We're young. We know things. I mean, I do use Discord a lot anyway, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
This feels very Marine trying to pretend like she's 17, which is clearly not stuff going on, but all right, cool. Yeah, I'm young.
I also put up our list from New Anime for Older Fans 2021 version, and that's on the website. And I also put, or I relinked to 2019, so I think we're going to try to make sure to put those lists up. You know, you don't get the benefit of, like, hearing us sell it, because I do think that matters, or seeing the clips that we show to try to encourage people to watch those shows, but it's something. It would be really hard for us to record the panel because of the clips, and it would just like immediately get flagged for.
I was actually randomly thinking that, like, oh man, you know, we could like put it on Twitch or something. Like, we could, and then I realized, oh yeah, no, that would immediately get flagged.
I mean, I don't know how to do that, but I just assume that it would. So.
No, you're probably right. Yeah, I had the same thought, and immediately I was like, oh no, I see why this is a bad idea.
So for anybody who didn't make it out to Otakon, which this whole episode of the podcast is about, but if you didn't make it out there, we did put that up. And I also am going to try to go back as far as I can and look at our lists, because I do have the old lists of what we've done previously, so I can also put those up.
I have a decent amount of the old clips. I mean, I have the one year where I did it alone, and it was just all Al clips.
Oh, wow. Where was I?
I think that was the year you took off from podcasting. They were all shows that, like, I knew you would never put or, like, never watch, so.
Well, then we'll also try to find that list and put it up. So let's just get right into it. So Otakon 2021, there was not an Otakon 2020 proper. There was an online one-day only convention, which we did talk about on the podcast, so people might remember that. And that was the first time Otakon really had to like stream things, and you know, they really worked really hard to sort of figure that out, to have something for 2020. But 2021 was back to old form. Although they were streaming some stuff on Twitch, so that was a new addition.
But it was mostly like the big ticket, and only in like panel room one, the biggest panel room. I don't think I like watched anything on there.
I was at the con, so I didn't really need to, but I thought that it was good that they were still doing stuff like that.
Yeah, it is interesting that I feel like lockdown forced a lot of conventions. Like, I know a bunch of Japanese conventions also like we're streaming only. And it's interesting to see how much that is and will continue to carry over, because I feel like very few cons are now like everything streaming, or like I've seen like one or two cons have like a stream, like you can buy a physical pass or a virtual pass, and like you know the virtual pass will only let you see like a majority of panels, but you know the real pass will let you see everything because you'll be there in person. But yeah, it's interesting to see going forward. It seems like it's affected everybody, and now that everybody's started streaming a little bit, at least in the major cons, but it'll be interesting to see how much that continues.
If anybody was sort of following, what was going on with Otakon 2021, it was the first big event in DC since COVID. It was the first big event in the convention center again. So there was a lot of excitement and trepidation about this event. I also feel, we kind of alluded to it on previous episodes, but like Otakon had to make this decision at a specific time when things weren't looking the way that they were looking once it was getting closer to the convention. So, but they also had to make the convention happen in a super truncated schedule. There was no vaccination requirement, but there was a mask requirement. And there was also a lot of procedures that everyone was informed about at the convention center that were like health clean, like cleaning things. The air filtration system was upgraded, and there was a temperature check coming in the main entrance. So, like, we got a lot of emails about like all the safety that was going to be happening at the con to make this happen. But I think, I feel like when Otakon first announced it, it was like a better time. It was like, okay, like it felt like not that everything was fine because it's never been fine, but like it was like, okay, like things are calming down. And then like Delta variant basically wasn't even really being talked about in the US at that point. So it was like, okay, like it feels like we can do this. And then I think kind of leading up to the con, some people had like felt like they were now more uncomfortable than they were at that, when Otakon announced it and they dropped out. So there was just so many different levels of comfort and like that going, I still don't know if going to this con was the right decision, but I did go and I did not get COVID. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just like a really hard, I think it was a really hard decision for everybody to make, whether or not they were going to go and how they felt about it. And like, yeah, go ahead.
I mean,
Sorry. I'm rambling.
I think we were just also just lucky enough that like none of us are immune compromised. None of us live with anybody who's immune compromised. So it's not like, oh, we go to the con, we're vaccinated, but we bring home Delta, and you know, then horrible things happen to someone we live with. So in that respect, we have a little bit of privilege that maybe other people don't. And we live in an area where it's not hard to get a vaccination. So, you know, we're all vaccinated. So, I feel like and we all wore masks. So I think we're all pretty responsible. So, I mean, like you said, I can't swear on a holy book or, the type of complete, encyclopedia that the decision we made was 100% the best or rightest decision, but I feel like at least we thought about it, and I think we at least took most of the precautions we could.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of us, or at least I should just speak for myself. I certainly thought less people were going to show up. Like, I was convinced that less people were going to go to this con, which, I think it was rationalizing a little bit, like, oh, well, it's not going to be as busy, when basically 25,000 people ended up showing up for the weekend. I think some people then felt differently. There's so many different emotions going on when it comes to trying to have this convention and being the first convention, right? Like, of the new reality that is COVID. So I would like to say that there was never a minute where I was at this convention where I was not wearing a mask because I did not drink or eat anything ever in the kit. Like, I was literally masked 100% of the time, all of the time, unless I was in my hotel room. So, like, I feel like I was pretty strict about how I approached it. I think other people at the con, I think mostly I saw mask compliance.
Yeah, like I don't remember super duper seeing anybody like, any like security or somebody like, because I've been working outside because I'm technically an essential worker since the beginning this whole time, and I've seen the whole range of people messed up with the shield to people wear nothing all the time and being super in your face about it. And so I felt like overall I saw a few people maybe if they were in a little corner together with somebody they knew, or maybe they just get a little bit of water or something, people going unmasked. But I feel like most people like we're pretty good about the mask thing. Actually, walking around in the streets of DC, you ran into a lot more people unmasked than you did at the convention.
I think it was sometimes confusing though, and I have to give Otakon as much credit as I can because they did do this with less staff. They did talk about that at con feedback that there was a lot less staff than usual for the con, and considering that they pretty much had a regular amount of people show up, that had to have affected things. But so, as I mentioned, there was a temperature check coming in the main building, but there's two entrances to this convention. So there is also where we were coming in every single day, all day, multiple times a day, was through the Marriott tunnel. And a lot of people come in through there, and that didn't have a temperature check. So I don't see how that was like useful. And then I read an interesting article. I don't know if you read this. There was an article on ANN about the con, but they actually made a really good comparison about how. So, if you've ever been to Otakon, or if you've been, I don't know, I think a lot of cons obviously have to adhere to certain rules. So, like, it's not just an Otakon thing, but like, fire code. Right, is like you hear a lot about it if you go to a con that's really busy because you can't stand in a panel room. Like, it's a huge problem. If you walk into an Otakon panel room and you try to stand, a Otakon staffer will come immediately and like tell you that you have to sit down, or they will yell at you or yell at everybody in the room. Like, you basically are not gonna, you're not gonna be able to do that.
I'll jump ahead a little bit to so I did go to one concert, and everybody was pretty much sitting down, relaxing, enjoying some jazz. But there was this one dude who was just like got up and like wanted to just dance in the aisles, and about 30 seconds in, one of the staff ladies would zoom in on him, and she was like, "If you want to dance in your seat, Want to stand up and dance in your seat? Do it all day. I ain't going to stop you. I'm going to encourage you. But the minute you're in this aisle, no, 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 no.
So they are, and they should be. Obviously, they have to be really stringent about fire code, right? That's important. But, like, everyone is on top of it. And on top of any attendee who is violating any of those codes. And also, the other policy that is really strict at Otakon, which, again, it has to be, right, is who can be on a panel stage? Who can be up there? Because you have to sign a waiver. Like, you have to do all this stuff, right, in order to do that. And if you don't have that, like, you will not be allowed up there. Like, you will be removed. Like, they're not going to let you get away with that. And there's a... And so they're really stringent about that. Like, I was in multiple panels where, like, people were yelled at for trying to stand. And, like, the staff made sure that they weren't doing that. So I do think that there was a lot of people talking about how they were not doing that if you weren't masked. And it's like, that is exactly how you should have been kind of, I think, in implementing that policy is like the same way as you are implementing these other ones. Like, it's no less important than those. And like, maybe you could say like, oh, it was the first year that we had to do it. I mean, and it's obviously, times are what they are, but like, it just, I think there was like, I thought it was a really good point and a really good comparison of like how the staff was not doing. Again, for the most part, I mostly saw people masked, but like, there's definitely plenty of stories and pictures and people talking about people not being masked in panel rooms. And like, why was that even like being ignored, period? And now I have a funny story about the panel policy. So I guess, so one thing that was actually weird, and we'll talk about panels in general, like, and later on in the podcast, but since it came up, I wanted to mention that. So there were at least three panels that were no-shows, which is actually pretty rare for Otakon because they have a pretty strict panel policy. And if you are, no one listening is no-show people, but if you are, you should have just called. That's all I would say about it. But anyway, I went to a panel that nobody showed up for, but apparently there was like an 18 plus panel that no one showed up for, and the audience then wanted to have their own panel. Like, apparently people from the audience were like, we will run a panel instead.
Because it was Con Horror Stories.
Oh, was it that one? Okay.
Because it was the 18 plus Con Horror Stories. And people were like, oh, well, I mean, we're just going to, like, the panelist is going to tell a few, and then he's probably just going to ask, he or she is just going to ask the audience for Con Horror Stories, so let's just cut out the useless, didn't show up middleman.
But they would not let people on stage. Like, people, this came up at Con Feedback because it was like, there's a really strict policy about, you know, like,
only they had a panelist in the audience, then they could have, they could have moderated the panel.
That's right. They just needed someone to pretend to, or like, who had the panel ribbon, like, and then you could have done it.
Didn't go to that panel, so I couldn't have.
I didn't go either, but I just heard of, like, I just heard this whole story of, like, the attendees took over, tried to take over the panel.
Because, yeah, Con Horror Stories is one that actually could have easily been.
That does make sense, because it is a lot of participation.
Was it like, it was like history of the Sengoku period?
I was thinking when I heard 18 plus, I was thinking more of like a hentai panel, and someone's just like, I have my phone. I'm just going to like play clips.
I think they just made it 18 plus so, you know, you could get, you know, the many infamous bad roommate stories.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm really glad. Well, I would never go to that panel because I don't need to know that, but I'm sure it would be very entertaining. The other thing that was missing for Otakon 2021 were international guests. I think that was a big, a big thing for certainly for Al and I that, we always really look forward to. I think that was there were other missing pieces, but I think that was like the big component. So obviously we want them back desperately, and hopefully next year that will be able to take place. But it's very interesting how much Otakon still felt like Otakon. It was sort of missing this one puzzle piece.
I mean, I think it took me a little longer to come up with, like, if no one knows this, I'll share a little inside baseball that's not very shocking. Usually on the last day of the con, when we all gather together for dinner, one of Kate's like frequent questions, that's pretty much a tradition, will be was like, what was your favorite part of the convention? And like, I feel like usually it's really easy because like 9 times out of 10, it's something around one of the Japanese guests. Either like, some amazing question, or we got to interview them and they answered this crazy question in a super unexpected way, or then they played this thing or announced that. It was a little harder this year. I still found plenty of stuff to enjoy and love and answer that question, but like usually my answer is like that because it's usually around the Japanese guests. Because I mean, complain what you want about Otakon, I will say undoubtedly they have some amazing guests every year, and so that was a little sad not to see this year, but Otakon is still Otakon and still pretty good. Just yeah, it was very. It did feel like one of the like. The one of the things I really look forward to about Otakon was sadly not there this year.
Yeah, so it felt like Otakon, but then it sort of didn't. It felt like a smaller con almost, where it's like I don't really have a big interest in, say, like the dubbed voice actors. And so there were many of them at this con, and they had some really big signings. I saw some big lines and some big panels for, like some of the really popular shows right now. So that felt like, oh, I'm at like a slightly smaller con, where I just do panels and like there's a few American guests, but like that's not my, field of interest.
Once again, it's a very reverse theme centric view to make it seem like there were no guests.
I
We
didn't
didn't say,
say none.
but like the way we were talking, it almost felt like there were no guests. But you very quickly pointed out that yes, there were guests. There were just, mostly American voice acting guests, which isn't our cup of tea, but it's still a big draw to the con. And I mean, I feel like a lot of people were super happy about that and no fault to them. So it wasn't like, once again, it wasn't like Otakon was like, just panels and an artist alley in the dealer's room, and other than that, get the fuck out. It was like, there were guests, and they were, very much enjoyed. It just weren't came out guests.
Exactly. So I feel like that was the big missing component. Luckily, Otakon's staff is very much committed to having Japanese guests come, so I'm not particularly worried that we're not, that that's going away.
I mean, also, Japanese guests take forever to line up, and they only had 2 months. Plus, with everything going on with the Olympics and the uptick in COVID cases in Japan, like those three things alone, like either any one of those three could have caused them to have no Japanese guests. All three ensured that there would be no Japanese guests at this con. So, like, it's not like Otakon dropped the ball and couldn't get any Japanese guests because they're all a bunch of incompetents. Like, I don't think anybody who didn't have, like, a personal blood debt favor, if they had that, they weren't willing to cash it in. So, no fault to Otakon for not having the Japanese guests. It just wasn't all sad not to happen.
And there were a couple of panels where there was some pre-recorded from Japan, like questions and some, and I'll talk about one, at least one of those. But so there was like a little bit of from Japan content, but the other things that I know for sure weren't there, so they didn't have the dance. They had some other kind of dance, but since I don't go to the dances, I don't really understand what the differences are, but they had some kind, but just not all of the kinds. There was no maid cafe. There.
Was a karaoke cafe room? There was no food, it was just basically a karaoke room.
Right. And there was no maker's space. And that's like a crafting place. That's a crafting area, which I was assured at ConfiBack will be back next year. It was just a COVID precaution not to have it this year. And
Because there were definitely cosplay photo shoots and meetups. Because I know one of the rooms that where they had that was that big, like the first year they had like the screenings in there, and the Marriott Bridge. So that was still there. There were still concerts. There were still panels. There was still the AMV concert contest. There was still the cosplay masquerade.
so, I mean, even though there were, some missing pieces, it really was like a pretty robust. They had the video game room, which I didn't go into, but it was humongous as usual. So, and the only other thing that I noted, which was mentioned, was that so there's two like really like the biggest rooms that they have at the top floor, where one of them is Main Events. But there's a smaller room up there that they also hold like really big events in. And that room, they were just like, we couldn't use it. So I don't know if it's like under construction or like what exactly that was about. So there was some space issues for like some of the events that got mentioned that like, oh, that was in too small of a room. And I was like, yeah, well, normally we would have it in that big secondary room, but for some reason it wasn't available.
Didn't they use that place as like a COVID treatment center? So maybe that was still in trans maybe that was like something that had gotten modified because of that and was like in the process of being converted back.
Yeah, maybe. That's the only thing that we know about that could be really, they didn't say what was going on, so I don't know, but that's a good guess, Al. And I think the really even without that, I think one of the real advantages of this convention space is that it's so big, and even with a like how crowded Saturday got in certain areas, it still felt really open. I that always made me feel a little bit better about like kind of coming and going in there in that space. And it's much bigger than it needs to be for the amount of attendees. So like that's really lucky and they're not like outgrowing the space. 'Cause like I'm just trying to think about other cons we've been to that have been really, really packed.
Like if this was still at Baltimore, ooh.
Oh my God. Like yeah, that would be really scary, right? Because it's like outgrown the place, and then that's how many people are packed in there in this particular time. It would just be, I think, more uncomfortable. So as far as, oh, wait, I wanted to mention one more thing. Also, as far as things that were not there, so there was no guidebook, like a physical one. Obviously, there was one on your phone. And there was no t-shirt. So there was basically no 2021 merch or anything. Except your badge. You obviously get your badge. And there were masks, but they didn't say 2021 on them, which was fine. But they also sold out on Friday. except for the very smallest size. And of course, you can't try them on because obviously. So I bought a small one anyway, just to, like, have it, but it's too small for me. And like, I don't wear like a very large mask size. So they were really small. So, yeah, I think that was one thing where obviously I think Otakon, you know, was concerned. They were having money concerns before this, and there was a lot of talk about that before the convention. And there was not a financials panel this year, but they did mention that I think they're going to do like a Twitch stream or something in the near future about the financials. And I think that will also address like what was done with all the donations because I forget how much they made, but like $30,000, something like
Wow.
that. 20, it was some like very, you know, like a good amount of money to keep them going. And I think people are very curious, like, okay, well, like how was that used?
Nothing but cocaine.
I one assumes. So not having the merch, you know, certain things like that were done for financial reasons and maybe even time reasons. I don't know. You know, it was again truncated, so maybe they couldn't get stuff done in time. But it did seem I was just like very upset about the masks because it's like what you couldn't have predicted that like you would need more than this many masks.
Maybe they were worried they weren't going to get that many people too.
Yeah, I know. It was like, come on, guys. Like, they were out on Friday before, like, and the dealer's room doesn't even open until like 2 p.m. or something on Friday. And they were out by like 6 p.m. So, yeah. So, could have done better predicting the crowds, I think. And they had ticket numbers, so they should be able to know a little better than like me, J Rando, like about how many people were going to show up. And the other thing going into the con that I thought was great that they had started this year was the newsletter. So they've done an email newsletter. I think I got, I'm trying to think, like three or four of them before the con where they'd talk about the safety stuff. They'd talk about, you know, when they'd announce new guests that would be in the newsletter. I think the last newsletter had like 20 things to do at, you know, list or something like that. So I thought that was great. I really liked the newsletter. And so I hope that they keep doing that, as they, you know, keep going. So what were the popular cosplays? What were we seeing tons of? What was everybody into?
So, correct me if I'm wrong, because you pay attention to people as opposed to I try to when people exist. But I think everybody saw a lot of Demon Slayer and a lot of My Hero Academia. I think those were pretty much the two big giants of the convention. Like, if you went 5 minutes without seeing one of those two, you were in a very weird place at the convention. I know me and my roommate were shocked. We thought we'd see we weren't surprised by those two, but I thought both of us thought we'd see a lot more Hololive because they really took off during the pandemic, especially since Hololive got like these ENN, members, the English members, and one of them, Gura, is like one of the most popular like Twitch people, like just in general. So, we were like, oh man, there's gonna be Hololive all around. And like Genshin Impact is like the big mobile game, and it's like anime is all Get Out. So we were expected to see that everywhere. And we saw, hey, we saw some Hololives, we saw some Genshins, but they were, nowhere near. They were a little more in the, definitely a little more in the artist alley, according to my roommate, but they were nowhere what I expected. I mean, I think we even had a conversation at dinner that, like, a lot of the stuff that came out in like the height of lockdown didn't seem to be at the convention. It seemed to be a lot of stuff either before lockdown or just started recently or restarted up again recently. It almost seemed like the lockdown period was just this, or at least peak lockdown was almost like this void century that the world government is keeping away from the people of the One Piece world.
You know, One Piece was just predicting COVID. Like, that's what the Void Century is all about. I agree that I saw a lot of Demon Slayer, a lot of My Hero Academia. I also agree that in the Artist Alley, I had to ask what Genshin Impact was because I didn't know what it was. And there was a lot in the Artist Alley in any case.
Oh, okay.
I don't. 'Cause I only know that because I asked people, and then I also, once I knew what it was called, like I'd see little stickers that would say like Genshin, you know, and then there would be like 30 buttons of every person in the game. I'm sure that's like one fifth of all the people in the game, but you know, like, but as far as like cosplay, it's hard for me to say because like I don't know. Of the COVID era shows, I think Jujutsu Kaisen. I did see a decent amount of both in the Artist Alley and like the occasional cosplayer.
I do know a few people mentioned seeing a surprising amount of Chainsaw Man.
You know, I somebody told me that too, but since I've never read it, I wasn't able to recognize it. Also, doesn't help that I think there's a girl in there who from first glance might look a lot like the girl from, oh God, what the hell was that show? It was all about like pregnancy and hormones and shit. I mean,
You gotta narrow it down
it
to.
was a robot show.
Oh, Darling in the Franks.
Yes, that looks like that girl a little bit, like from just like it's just like pink hair and like devil horns.
Okay.
And so
I was about to say, you're basically describing a show horny on Maine. We are an anime podcast. That hardly narrows
I
it
know, but
down. Yeah,
it had themes.
I know where you were going for the minute you said robot show. I was like, oh, okay.
I should have led with the robot part, and that would, well, you could have been like Aquarius.
Wow, Aquarion! Weird that
At least, and again, that's what I was told. I've never read Chainsaw Man, so I can only take the word of other people regarding it. I also would say that something I was surprised, not surprised, I think we've seen it decline, but I would say that I saw zero Attack on Titan cosplayers.
think I saw like one, but like considering how it was like previous years, it would be like the only way I could describe it for the olds who listen to this thing is like imagine the height of Naruto fandom, and then the next year, no Narutos. You'd be like, what happened to Naruto that everybody's like? I think I saw one, yeah, Survey Corps member. Uno.
So yeah, I thought that was, you know, interesting because it did come back. You know, it had a really intense, seemingly pretty well watched season during COVID. Because as you mentioned, Al, you know, My Hero and Demon Slayer both have had iterations like right before the con, so I think it just kept them in the mind a little bit, like of everybody, you know, they were popular. They continue to be popular because they have new iterations of them current. So they like their popularity doesn't drop off yet.
Before we get into panels, I have to go on a panel rant. There was one thing that was going on way too much, and I got to complain about it right now. So, maybe every once in a while this would happen in the past, and everybody who's like a seasoned panel pro would shake their heads and like kiss their fingers, and you'd go, ah, man, that one person who did this. and move on with their life. But I went to three separate panels where the whole panel, all the slides for the panel were A, on Google Drive, which wasn't downloaded to the computer, was still on the Google Cloud, and all their clips were streaming from the internet, and all their panel relied on the panel Wi-Fi. Amazingly, all the panels played somewhat. But two of the three panels, like half the images didn't load. And all three panels had some kind of hiccup running the video. Like one panel was just like a little hiccup, and the rest of the videos weren't that many, played fine. One of them, there was like intermittent, and one of them, they just, if they're the first video didn't load, they just never showed any of the videos. But like, I cannot stress how much this was very lucky for everyone involved. Like, you have to download your slides to your computer, and you have to cut your clips and not rely on that internet, because you might get away with it 9 out of 10 times, but that 10th time is gonna bite you on the bum hard. And I think it's just like one, I know Oticon always tries to get in new blood, which is good of them, because that's who's gonna keep the panels alive. But because not everybody's gonna be a super duper ace presenter their first time out, but you got to give them that first time out so their second and third time they can be that ace presenter. So, but I think because there were a lot of new people this year, a lot of the younger people were like, I can rely on the internet because they're gonna have Wi-Fi throughout the building, and oh no, you cannot do that. And so like one, like I think it would be in Oticon's best interest to like, not like forbid it, but definitely dissuade it in their panel, application that you should not be doing that. And I think we're thinking about doing like a like how to do a panel in 2021, like either video or podcast or something like that, because like, I think it's clear that a lot of people don't know like the software, and especially since you can get all of it for free. I mean, there's some better software if you pay the monies, but not everybody has that monies. But there are ways now to do all of that stuff and get it all on your machine so that you don't have to rely on Wi-Fi, because it came pretty close to knocking out one or two of those panels. And it was just like a hope and a prayer that kept some of those panels from totally fizzling out.
No, I think you make a good point, Al, that I think a lot of people, are now so accustomed to stream. Like, we just stream all of our anime, right? Like, you don't have to download anime anymore. I mean, you can. We know how. It's still possible, right? But you don't need to for the most part. So, like, I do wonder if, like, it's, people don't know how to do. They don't know how to steal anymore, and they really need to learn how to
I
steal.
mean, you don't even have to steal. You can. I definitely, if we do the tutorial, I definitely want to have a like, if you're gonna be a total white knight and not like look at fan subs or anything pirated, there's still ways to do it, and still ways to do it either on the cheap or for free. But that means you have to own the physical media and be able to rip that physical media. There are ways of doing that. It can be done, even if you don't want to go to, maybe some video files that fell off the back of a truck.
It's just so funny to, like the children, They aren't sitting on DC++ downloading anime for like hours and hours and hours and leaving it overnight. That's for my old school listeners. If you got that reference, I went to one of the panels I was mentioning, and I was, obviously horrified by this turn of events. So
So was it a Tana panel? Oh, I'm sorry, Ikahara panel. And so it was super dependent on images. And so if only half the images loaded and none of the videos, like they just like shot themselves in the foot right out of the gate.
and it was so that panel, I think they were very knowledgeable. They really had a passion for Ikuhara, which, like, I don't think you could run a panel about him and not, like, there'd be no reason to.
But it wasn't like one of those like, clearly they just like got drunk the night before and then put it together like in 10 minutes kind of panels, which I've seen before.
That's true. No, like, I could tell that there was a solid foundation in deep within.
Well, I think the line, since we might as well get into talking about panels now that my rant is over, I think the line that summed up their whole panel best and what went wrong with it was when we first practiced, the first 2 times we practiced this panel, it was a 2.5 hour panel. And it was like, oh, that explains a lot because you clearly had like 4 hours worth of panel, this wasn't a panel. This was like a series of YouTube Twitch videos that would be like go on for like 2 or 3 months kind of thing. And then you never really ever fully figured out how to pare it down.
There was just too much content, and I think that's a great problem to have in a certain sense, because then you can curate it a little bit. But I think unfortunately the panelists weren't quite sure how to do that, and so I think they kind of had to speed through some things. And I think instead of hurrying through, it was almost as if they needed to just cherry pick what they were going to talk about, because unfortunately, or fortunately, actually, I would say fortunately, Ikuhara has so many things about his work that you could talk about, like so many aspects, so many themes, so many visual motifs, right? We just did something like Al and I did one panel about Ikuhara that was like specifically only about like visual motifs that he would use, and then we did a whole panel about like Penguin Drum and what, like the themes in Penguin Drum. And like those both were full panels and just picking one specific thing. And I think this was like almost, this was like too ambitious. And it was really that they needed to pick. They just had to pick. It's like they didn't want to pick. 'Cause I understand, right? Because he's so amazing. He has so many interesting things in his work that you want to talk about, but yeah, it was like they had to pick and they didn't want to.
Yeah, I think it was like 3/4 of the panel was already done and they were just wrapping up Penguin Drum. And I like turned to Kate and I'm like, so at this point, I think the rest of the panel is just going to be one slide that just has Yuri Kuma. It just says lesbians, and then the next one is going to be Sarazanmai. It's just going to say butt stuff, and then conclusion.
I know. I was actually surprised that they got through more about those shows than Al's Trunicated version. But yeah, I feel like they knew a lot, and they seemed really knowledgeable. They seemed really passionate, more specifically what they wanted to talk about, because otherwise it just kind of was like a little overwhelming.
Or they need to be super cursory. And like the problem is they want to go in too much depth, which is cool, but it's cool if you have a narrow focus. Otherwise, you've gotta like paint the broadest strokes and move on. And I think like once again, because you said they were passionate, and I agree with you, they wanted to, go into depth and give lots of examples and they just, yeah, they They just were like, we're going to talk about the history of music. Oh, a specific musical genre? No, all of music.
And we say, I have to say, I say this with lots of love because I think Ikuhara is amazing. I want to see more Ikuhara panels. Like I said, I think that the panelists, like, their heart was in the right place, and I think that they could really do a great, it was almost like a paper. Like, it was like, this could be like an amazing paper, but how do you make that into like a really entertaining panel? And I think that is a tall order. And I think we're also being, you know, talking about this a lot because we love Ikuhara so much that we want to see, you know, see it more often. So a couple of ones that I want to call out were aural anime. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it was about music in anime, and now just brought up music. And so that was I thought that was a really good panel, and the panelists also very knowledgeable and felt like, oh wow, they really understand music, where, because I never understand music, and I like music, I like hearing it, and I love the things that I love, but I don't like understand like theory and like all of that stuff, and they clearly did. But I think that there weren't enough examples. I really wanted to hear more, and they clearly understood the differences between things, and as a person who just doesn't get it, I felt like I needed more like direct examples instead of you telling me that this is different. Like, play me two things and then guide me through that a little bit more. So I was looking like, and I feel like they were totally capable of doing that. Like, for example, which I didn't know this, and this is really cool, and Al, you might already know this, but so the loop on the third opening, so it's the same in every Lupin series, they use the same theme, but depending on like where it is, it changes slightly the like way they play it. So they used the French arc as an example. So that opening has a French jazz like slant to it. And that's different from like other versions of the opening. But they didn't play, like, I was like, well, then play me like three and show and point out like where this is changing so that like I could really get what that means. So I just wanted more examples. It like needed more music.
I'm going to be super pedantic here. Technically, Lupin Part 1 has its own two weird themes that like barely ever get used, except for like, I think Lupin Part 5 used a little bit of it because that was like the celebration of old Lupin. It's the Lupin Part 2 opening. That's like the iconic one that everybody uses past that point.
Okay.
No, I'm telling you, I'm being pedantic, just mostly because we had a review for Secret Santa, and I remember how dumb that the two parts.
No one wants to think about those songs, Al. Ejected them from our minds. So yeah, so I felt like, and then like kind of at the end of the panel, they kind of went into like sort of music business and how that works a little bit. And I felt like, oh, I would rather have more of the different styles and information instead of that. So like, personally, I would have like cut off that part of the panel and just had more, because I really wanted to hear more music at this panel. They did play music. I'm not to say they never did, but I really thought that they could have upped the amount of music that was being played.
Oh, since Lupin and me being pedantic, I did see the most amazing unicorn event at a convention of all time. I saw a 75% filled 70s anime panel.
I mean, that makes me happy as a person who loves 70s anime, but I could have never predicted such a thing.
Like, you know that the just the crowds were, and audiences for panels were bigger on Saturday, and I was like, bravo, you magnificent bastard. Teaching all these kiddies about 70s anime, I salute thee. The only reason I have to be pedantic, the only like real criticism, is that he kind of implied that Miyazaki and Takahata were like responsible for like making part one very, because Lupin the part one was in the 70s, very close to the Monkey Punch, whereas like two would be a lot more family friendly and kind of be the one that popularized Lupin. And then past that point, it's very variable how much they're. And he made it seem like, but it was really, that was a lot of the work of the original director. And actually, Miyazaki and Takahata kind of like split the difference of the Lupin they wanted and the Lupin that they had inherited. And so, like, a lot of the later part one is kind of a compromise. But I mean, that's, once again, you're going through dozens of shows, and Takahata and Miyazaki are the names people are going to remember, so you're going to talk them up more than random dude who originally started directing Lupin Part One. But otherwise, it was a very good panel. And once again, I am amazed that you can get that kind of turnout for a 70s panel. So once again, bravo, brava, and all the compliments.
I went to Daryl Surratt's 30 Years Ago Anime in 1991. That was like the first panel of the con. And first of all, it's illegal to say that the 90s were 30 years ago. That's my I was like, how can you
How dare you?
how dare you?
I just that picture. Have you ever seen the picture of the lady pointing and yelling, and then it pulls, and it's clearly she's pointing and yelling at the cat. I just imagine you are pointing and yelling, and it pulls, pans, and it, you're pointing and yelling at Daryl Surratt.
I mean that's how I that's what I wanted to be doing. But it was it was a great way to open the con for many reasons, but I think one of them was Otaku no Video is from 1991. So for those of you who don't know, Otakon itself always runs Otaku no. That's the first thing in the video room every Otakon. And so it just happened to align this year that was 91. So it was like, oh, it's so perfect. Like at the same time Daryl's talking about it here, it's like running in a video room.
I just, this is neither here nor there, but one of the people that we went with, like, went out of their way to see Project Eco for the first time. Discotheque just remastered it, and, they had, like, come see the new Project Eco, now fully restored, and, the most beautiful.
I do know how much I love your carnival voice, like every time you do.
Clearly, this is how, what do you call it? This is what my tool sounds like, an old-fashioned carnival baka. And yeah, I was very amused because I feel like, I think our both reaction to Project Eco is, oh, that was something I saw, but they were just so insistent. I'm like, I've got to see this classic. And we were both like, you can do that. We're not gonna like, it's not so bad we're gonna stop you, but like we're not like, man, we've gotta go with you, Project Acos.
Although some people feel that
Oh yeah,
way.
no. I just had to mention that. So I just found it so funny that they were just so happy and like gung-ho to see Project Aco, and we were both like, that's nice.
It's surprising that you haven't seen it, so maybe it is good that you do. If you want. The Discotheque panel, obviously, always a highlight. There was also an Animigo panel, which is super rare. So, like, there was There's some nice like old school feeling. And now Al mentioned that the 70, not that 70s panel. Like that's probably a good name for a panel. Bad Anime Bad had a 20th anniversary panel here at Otakon, so that was really
I think
fun.
that was like the most crowded panel we were at the whole convention. But I mean, that guy always draws a, big crowd because, he just, he always puts on a great show. And, he, by tradition played some, Dracula Sovereign of the Dam, but he had a bunch of other new stuff as well.
And just, it's having gone to the panel multiple times, like some of it was stuff I'd seen, some of it wasn't, but it's also really fun to go there and see the reactions of people that have like never, like there's something, it's like one of those panels where you want to take other people to it so that they suffer as you do, but then like you get to see them realize that like this is real. So like it was pretty fun. It's always like a really fun time. I felt like, I think overall I felt like panels were really solid, but there, like I mentioned at the beginning, there were a few no-shows. Some things always drop off, which is normal. But there were also like I made the joke that so somebody said, "Oh, my panel's up against a Gundam panel," and I said, "That's every panel this year. Like literally every panel slot felt like there was a Gundam panel." And I like Gundam, everybody. Like obviously, but it seemed unnecessary, especially because I know multiple people who had panels rejected. So it wasn't a year where they were just taking anything. It was like.
A wild cards panel. I guess we'll take it.
Horrifying. But yeah, so I don't know what like how that exactly happened. Whatever. Some years are just weird like that, I guess. But overall, I feel like I saw a lot of new people running panels. I also saw, established people that I've seen before, but I felt like it was a good, what I at least attended felt like a good mix of new people and veterans.
Yeah, like there was one woman who ran a Megalobox panel. She seemed I hadn't seen her before. Maybe she's run panels before, but I hadn't seen her. She was a little dry, but she was like very well. Like she had done a lot of research, and I saw a lot of potential in her because it was very clear that she had like planned out and practiced her panel and. When she was like 100% on script, and it wasn't like she was just reading. It was clear she only had like a few slides with like some keywords, but it was very clear when she was just doing what she practiced, she was kind of dry. But the few times that she went off script, she was probably the most entertaining. But everything about her panel was super solid. Her clips were on her machine. Her slides were on her machine. Her stuff was very well researched and informative. Like, if you wanted to know behind the scenes stuff about Megalobox, she was there. And, like, it's definitely like she's the kind of person that, like, I want to see back at Otakon again. Because, like, was her panel perfect? No. But do I think her second panel is going to be better? Definitely. And, like, yeah, by like letting people like that have a chance, you're gonna see them grow because, like I said earlier, is your first panel out of the gate gonna be this amazeball thing that knocks everybody's socks off? Might, but not always. But if you have super solid fundamentals like that, you really can grow and like. Become, a staple of the circuit, and I hope that some of the newbies like her continue to grow like that. And like I said, if I see that lady doing a panel again, I'll see it again because I definitely think she has room to grow and she has these the necessary seeds that I can see that growth coming.
Well, actually, you make a good you made a point out that I think I saw some on the forums, which was like, could there be an established way that Otakon, especially like in Guidebook, could link you to the panelists, like that aren't famous people that you don't know, right? Because sometimes the panels like will say if somebody thinks to put in like their social media or like if you know whoever, but not all of them do that. And like if there could just be a part in the form where it's like, or you could find other panels by this panelist, like that came up too, because some people run multiple panels at the con, and like how will you ever know, right, that she's running a panel again? Like how do you know that? You know, like how would you find that out? You know, you might just get lucky and like, oh, this sounds like an interesting panel, and then you go there and it's like, oh, I remember her, you know, for whatever, which happens all the time for those of us who like to go to panels. But yeah, just like some way of like finding people again and like would be really, really great. Also, I saw this on the forums too, which I noticed after we did our panel, which I told people like, hey, rate us on Guidebook. That was not a feature this year in Guidebook. You know, again, obviously the staff who run the rooms let panel ops know, like, how full was the room? How did the panel, you know, did the panel go all the way, you know, whatever. Like they're able to give feedback, but you know, like some, again, like better ways of getting feedback for panelists would be really great. So, and you know, like this person, right? Like how do you make sure that she is like, I mean, obviously you can't make sure that she comes back because you don't run panel ops, but you know, to make sure that that feedback is like
Well, I mean
there.
that's why we do this podcast and why I specifically shouted her out. But yeah, not everybody has podcasts, and not necessarily anybody important and then who would be in decision making is even gonna listen to this podcast, but that's why I think it's super important if you really like or really dislike a panel, you should mention it in the Oticon forums because I know they do read those.
Yeah, but you know, oh my gosh, speaking of when you know what Otakon needs? They need a Discord. That's what they need. Like, or something, or tweet at them. And like, I think they have an Instagram, I think they have a Facebook. So I think those are places, but like the forum is pretty dead. I did read all the forum for before this panel, and there's like, man, if you thought it was dead before this year, like, there is so little feedback on there, because it's just not, this is not the way people communicate anymore. So, you know, I think people who use have always used the forums, are still using them, but like, yeah, otherwise, not getting a lot of new traffic in there. Of,
It's all the olds like us.
I don't know, I don't know how old people are, but yeah, it's just like not, and but then at the same time, you know. Not, you don't want all the feedback, you know what I mean? Like, I get that. It's not like you really want 25,000 attendees telling you how they felt. Like that nobody wants that either, but I do think that there could be better mechanisms for that. And I did get the Otakon survey this morning, but that didn't all, like, it was just like it was more general. It wasn't like, tell us all the panels that you went to and what did you rate them 1 through 5 or something like that, you know? So, I think though, because Otakon is so known for their panels, I think that's something that people really know, certain people really know them for. I think if since that is the case, it would be great to establish some mechanisms and you know, as some guidelines, like you said, Al, just to really hone that, because it's obviously one of the most special things about Otakon.
I think one of the problems in Otakon's defense is, like I said, before this year, I'd maybe seen one panel a year doing that, but it just seemed like an epidemic this year. And if I saw three, There must have been at least three others at minimum that were just, I just didn't attend doing the same thing. So I think it's like a new phenomenon of just like, once again, I feel like in the past, Wi-Fi was so fleeting and like unreliable that only the dumbest would rely on it. But now it's just reliable enough that it fools people into thinking they can rely on it. So one last thing that which kind of event, kind of a panel, but I wanted to mention, just if you watched Otakon last year, one of the things that came back for the first time in years was Mystery Anime Theater 3000. So they played Rock Me Nora, and they MST3K'd it. And I know Rock Me Nora is kind of famous for being this series because it was just like one OVA on Laserdisc and all these people like spending a whole bunch of money to like import this, like, because it looked really nice, but then everybody who watched it thought it was garbage. So it's kind of infamous for like these people wasting all this money importing this expensive Laserdisc for a super mediocre OVA. So this year, the show was this one episode OVA of a Ninja Gaiden series that never got a second OVA, even though it had like a much longer storyline planned. It was very entertaining. They had the little they had a skit beforehand. They played a little episode. They had a commercial break. They played the rest of the episode. They had a skit at the end. It was an interesting choice. It was a pretty bad anime, so it made but it wasn't totally wretched. So it was kind of the good sweet spot, and it was Ninja Gaiden, so it was a name that you knew. And like, but I didn't know there was a Ninja Gaiden OVA, so I was both informed and entertained. And they had a contest at the end where they threw in a bunch of like continuity errors, and the first person to like at the end, the like first person raised their hand and spot one, got a free t-shirt. I raised my hand first, so I got a signed t-shirt from the whole staff. So that was pretty cool. So I had a good time, and apparently this current new crew that took over from the old crew, they're gonna try to do it every year for as long as they can. So, and if you want, they have last year's and this year's online, so you can if this like I'd love to see someone MST3K-ing a Ninja Game OVA. They there the crew has it online.
Hey Al, maybe you could post that in the Discord.
I guess I could.
Um,
You will have to remind me, please.
that, well, yeah, I think that's really cool, and I'm glad that, yeah, is it a panel? Is it an event? Whatever it is.
I just figured I'd share it on like the cusp
Yeah.
section.
So like we mentioned, there weren't There were, sorry, like we mentioned, there were a couple of panels that were playing pre-recorded content from Japan, but it was special for the con specifically.
Was there, I know what you're going to talk about, wasn't there also, I think you went to this, but I didn't, was there like an industry panel of American or Japanese panel, like industry stuff that couldn't be? I thought there was one like panel slot that was like industry panels, and it was just like pre-recorded stuff that's like not from Discotech or Animego.
Oh, I don't know. Like American companies, you mean? Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I know there were like a number, at least I didn't know about any domestic stuff. I just knew there were a couple of from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I did go to was from Studio Orange. You know them for probably if you know them, you know them for Beastars. So they're a CG studio, and then they did Land of the Lustrous, and they've done a lot of work for other studios.
You also know them as the one anime studio that does CG well.
Yeah, they're like upping the level of it every time.
So not Polygon Pictures.
No. And they yeah, so they did a panel where they showed their new short film called Home, and it was like it about a space colony and a ghost that was so it was like and it was all in CG. And then they had a whole making of, basically the rest of the panel was kind of a behind the scenes of the making of it. And some, like one of the things that I thought was really cool was that for this, I don't know if this, because they've done another short, and this short should be, I think, available on their YouTube, and their previous short is also up there, which I will link to. But I don't know if this was something that they are establishing for all of their shorts, but for this one in particular, they were talking about that they wanted, you know, like junior level staff to like take the helm of it so that they could learn stuff. So it was like new people, you know, just like learning the trade of like directing and stuff like that. So I thought that that was really cool. And I think it was like a new character designer that did the drawings and stuff. So yeah, I just liked sort of that method. I think that's kind of how the studio system works, but it was nice to see that them kind of highlighting that. And then you got to see some of like the studio. So we got to see like they have motion capture stuff that they do and like how that fits into this, but then also how it's limiting. So like they use it for certain things, but then they have to like reanimate over it, and like it was pretty intensive. Like it's it I so I know that once you establish things in a CG environment, it's easier to animate past that point, but it looks so complicated to me to establish it. Even though I know that traditional animation is also like really, really, really hard, but at least in traditional animation, you just like draw, you draw, I don't know, something about it, like, it's like in my mind, I know that that is true, but when I see people doing it, I'm like, how is this easier at all? I don't understand. But anyway, yeah, it was just a cool panel, and the I forget if he's the producer or who was running the panel, but he's been to Otakon like a few times, and like I recognized him, and so he's always like a good front man for the studio. So yeah, it was nice. You know, obviously wish they could have been there in person, but it was a nice way. It was like one of the last things I did at the con too, so it was a nice way to end things.
That's where I was. I was at the concert. I was like trying to remember why I wasn't there. Because I was like, I remember Kate mentioning it, and I was like, oh, I remember there was something else. I was like, all right, as long as Kate goes to it, at least one of us goes there, then it'll be fine. So, what I didn't go to see that was because I went to see the J Music Ensemble concert on Sunday. Because I didn't see the Friday the video game music concert, but I was like, yeah, Sunday I'll be a lot more relaxed, and I could just get a seat, properly social distance. And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast plenty of times. I'll mention it again, maybe it's somebody's first time. I always like the Sunday concert because I always feel like, because they're usually the Sunday ones are usually a lot more relaxed too, and I just find them a nice way to just like cool down and just like Listen to some music. Just that this feels like a nice, like, sorbet at the end of your meal, for any co convention you go to. This year was J Music Ensemble. They're an 8-piece jazz ensemble, and they do like video game and anime related music. And like the front man mostly spoke most of the time, and he would, introduce them. And actually, they came in playing from downstairs, and then they slowly, like, you could hear them coming from the distance, and then they came in through the back doors and then went through the whole crowd up to and then onto the stage. So they definitely had a flair for coming on. And yeah, they played a bunch of stuff. I'd say the thing that they got the most out of was Persona 5, but that distinctly has a jazz theme to its music. Kind of jazzy thieves. It kind of makes sense. At one point, I thought, oh, they're not going to play Tank. I guess that's like too obvious, but they just had saved it for the end. And yeah, it seemed like, some of the songs they picked because they were popular, some of the songs they picked, like, they had like a Demon Slayer song because, as we mentioned, like, it seemed like if there was anything to just, like, win over the crowd easily, that was one. The only thing my roommate was upset about was at one point they paid Big Blue, and the front man said, oh man, there was one game that got me through the pandemic, and it was Mario Kart. And he was like, and this song is from Mario Kart. He was like, you youngster, that's a song from F-Zero. It just happens to be in Mario Kart now. But it was very fun. They were very talented, and they definitely had a flair for performing. It was just a nice way to, like, if there's anything to say, like, kind of like relax. Most of the songs I picked were upbeat, but I still felt that it was like a relaxing way to end the con before con feedback. And since they weren't able to get really that many Japanese guests and bands, they were still very much on brand because they played all video games and anime music, and all the video games they picked were Japanese video games. So it was definitely very relevant to the con, and just a nice, like, a very pleasant end to the Sunday. Definitely one of my highlights.
That sounds really fun. I'm sad too. Maybe they'll come back. Like if they're like local or something, then maybe they'll have a chance to come again. I just want to end my kind of Otakon experience with the Artist Alley. Obviously, if you know me or you've listened to the podcast enough, you know that the Artist Alley is where my heart belongs, and I spend a lot of time there every year.
Ah,
And
plus you gained the like reputation of being the stock analyst of buy, sell, sell.
yes, and I can tell you, I mean, I feel like my predictions are not always right, as all,
Market analysts.
yeah, I can't always predict everything, but the I because I thought for sure that enamel pins had like reached their peak last Otakon, and then it was like, okay, well, things have to calm down from here. No, sir. In fact, I think maybe I saw more than ever, and now they have gotten incredibly elaborate. Like these, he's very, very large. Not everyone, but I saw some that were just incredibly detailed with like multi tiers or like ones that open So, you know, like there's a front end and you have like something on the end. It was like wild. I couldn't believe some of the stuff that I saw. As far as new stuff, so one of the things I saw a lot of were these very lightweight button-down collared shirts, and they were like short sleeved, and they were like kind of like a satiny or like just very like very light material. And I saw a lot of those, which like clothing isn't a really common item now. Like t-shirts even aren't that common, but yeah, I saw actually more clothing than ever before, I think.
They look cool. That sounds cool. And also, I think every, once again, to show our age, how many people immediately thought of like the Dragon Ball Z club shirts?
How do I describe them as not that, but that material? Yeah, like,
Yeah, and just everybody of a certain age knows those Dragon Ball Z club shirts.
I know.
The only thing I'm worried about is not this year, but like next year, if things go back to relatively normal, that seems like something some Japanese companies might have like issue with. Because, like usually what they're worried about is like when the stuff in Artist Alley is competition for official goods, and those shirts just the way you described it just popped into my head. That might be something like a Aniplex or a company like that might be like, hey guys, could we not see that here next year? Or else, problems.
I will say a lot of the ones I saw were mostly like a pattern or original
Oh,
stuff.
that's smart, because that
It
like
wasn't like it wasn't the Dragon Ball Z Club shirt where you have like a big Goku on it or something. So it seemed like even if it was anime related, it was like more of like a pattern. The other thing, obviously, there was a lot of masks. Which was a hope for me, but I actually didn't see anything that I really wanted a mask, so I didn't end up buying any masks, but there were, of course, a lot. Also, mouse pads have like really made a comeback. Maybe it's because of a lot of gaming, like gaming now, like streaming. I don't know, but like, and like really big, like very large ones. So I thought that was interesting. I was kind of surprised to see that. And then the item that was new, like, well, besides the shirts, the item that was like totally new to me was, so keychains have always been big, obviously, and acrylic keychains, but now there's like these kind of, I think they were calling them shaker keychains, but they're like filled. So, you know, they like, you can shake, you know, kind of like a,
Still glow?
yeah, but there's no liquid inside.
Ah, that's fine.
So I saw lots of those, and they are some of them were so creative. Like the my favorite one that I saw was actually I saw some really cool JoJo's ones that were like got crane game machines that had like different it had like all the he like heads from like one series and then it looked like a crane game and it was really funny. Those were really cool, but the most creative one that I saw was a Jujutsu Kaisen one where like it had, I think it had the characters on it, but then like the shaker part was just Sukuna's finger, like it was just a whole bunch of fingers, which was really funny. So I just saw people using them in really like creative ways, and I'm just so I would be fascinated to see a tutorial on how you get those made because seems pretty complex. That would, you know, is neither here nor there. It just was really interesting. So I really always enjoy Artist Alley, of course. There's never a time when I don't. And it was really full. I was pretty surprised because again, they had to, you know, the con had to happen pretty quickly, but the alley was pretty like I feel like there were more empty spots in the dealer's room than there were in the artist alley.
We kind of touched on it a little, but was there anything you were surprised you saw a lot of or didn't see as much as you thought? Or it was basically what you expected?
Well, the thing was is that I feel like I bought a little bit less this year, and that wasn't because there weren't incredibly talented, like there were so many talented people down there and some really cool stuff, but a lot I noticed that like just some of the things that were really popular were just not popular with me. So like I mentioned, like Genshin Impact, there was a lot. There was like a lot of game, like a lot of mobile games stuff down there besides that. And like I saw a lot of Final Fantasy. What's the new, you know, like there's the new
Remake one.
not the remake, the like online, you know,
Oh,
like
yeah.
the that's really big right now.
Brave Exia, I think.
Yeah, so like it was, so I like saw a lot of like really, like I loved a lot of the styles that I saw, but like kind of what they were, what series they were like into weren't just like weren't what I was looking for necessarily. So I feel like there was a lot of that. I did buy like some original stuff. And then that's the other thing is that I felt like a little bit lost almost, which I've never really felt before, but I just felt like I wasn't as like I wasn't recognizing as much stuff as I usually do. And there was a lot of original work down there, which I'm into and like to buy some original stuff too. But there was a lot of stuff where I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I'm pretty sure it's not original, but I don't know what it is, so I don't want to like buy it
Yeah.
because it's like, you know. So I did feel like I felt a little bit like I was out of touch a little bit because I don't watch the virtual YouTubers, I don't play mobile games, and I don't like, you know, play a lot of PC games or any, I don't know, like I just felt like I wasn't like as up to date, it seemed like, as what was down there. But like the talent was just it was, you know, the level I expect, and it just like so amazing. So I'm really looking forward to like what everybody does next year, and hopefully I'll be able to buy more original stuff. I like to buy original stuff, as well as fan art. And I did have a like Artist Alley was pretty crowded all of the time. And it was kind of the only place where I did find myself sort of being like, well, I could go over there, but I'm not gonna. Like, there's a lot of people and they're really close and they're, you know, and it takes me a little, it takes me, y'all don't even understand. You think I spend so much time in Artist Alley and I'm like a weirdo, but I am a weirdo, but it takes me so long to look at a booth. Like it's like endless because I must like inspect every single thing. And I just found myself not as able to do that because I was kind of worried about like spending too much time in a specific space. So, I still walked away with a lot of stuff. I took a picture, I posted it, you know, so, it was still the highlight of the con, so.
Okay, you've got your pro gamer rig that you use to stream all the video games that you play. Why don't you have a mouse pad for your pro gamer rig?
You know, there were some pretty cool mouse pads down there. I was tempted, and I was like, wait, I don't what do I need this for? Like
How are you gonna get those Twitch views and subs if you don't have your anime-themed mouse pad for your pro gamer rig, kid?
Al, I only just established the Discord, okay?
Okay.
It's gonna take me a while to like build up to that.
Okay, cool.
So I thought we'd just end with a little bit from the con feedback. So I was totally blown away by how many people got up at con feedback and said, Hello, this is my first Otakon. What the hell are you doing here? Like, do you want to make this your first? Or like, hello, this is my first convention. Like, oh my God! Like, this is the time that you decided that you were gonna do this?
I mean,
Like,
I do feel like a lot of people just once again being feel pent up and like this seemed like a release. So like imagine like being into anime or getting to anime during lockdown and being like, I can finally see other people who like the thing that I like.
I guess I get it. It was a little wild to me. And we kept, it was funny because the first person said it, we're like, wow, that's so weird. I can't believe that. And then we just kept track of like kind of making our reactions more and more extreme every time somebody said it.
I mean, it got to the point where one of the people in the con feedback said, please do not announce how many years or lack thereof you have been going to Otakon. Just ask the question.
Con feedback actually was kind of lovely because I actually thought people were really generous and grateful for the most part in their feedback, like more so than I usually see at the con, you know, and like people were just so like, I had some problems, but I think, you know, that was really COVID, you know, like it's the time. People were just like, seemed like they were really willing to understand why things happened in a way that I haven't seen them normally.
They weren't just spitting fire and
No, they really weren't.
there was like one guy, but I think like that's like expected.
People were just sort of very understanding, I thought, at the con feedback. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of like really good suggestions that I thought were really good. So somebody mentioned the orientation of the map in the like kind of cheat sheet you get and how it's like oriented weird because of the way you enter the building. And so I was like, oh, that's such an interesting design thing that you've noticed. And like, I wonder if they will change that in any way. One person suggested a scavenger hunt, which I thought was a really fun idea. You know, you could, a lot of times you do scavenger hunts now, you like with your phone, so you have to take a picture of something and then like you can win stuff, which I thought was really fun. And someone mentioned, could they do a beginner's guide to Otakon? Because it is such a big con, there is a ton to do. And like, I thought that was a really fun thing, and maybe I'll steal it. Of like, first time at Otakon, like how to kind of navigate, you know, what how to do Otakon. So I thought that was like a great suggestion. And then in the forums, I think it was, somebody mentioned, hey, why doesn't Otakon make a piece of merch that is a poster tube with the Otakon logo on it? Because everybody, well, first of all, everybody's always looking for poster tubes in the artist alley and there are never any. So like I had always thought like, hey, there's always dealers who do those, so like invite one of those dealers. But no, Otakon should just sell their own. They can make a mint. Like, just yeah, get your Otakon branded poster tube for the artist alley. I can't believe they've never done it before. It was such a great suggestion, so I hope they take it.
Yeah, they have one booth at Artist Alley, one in the dealer's room, and just ching, 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 ching,
Ching
ching.
ching. Yeah, I think that's such a great, and they don't have to brand it for the year, so they could, you know, like you know, they wouldn't have to worry about stock or whatever. So yeah, I just thought that was an awesome suggestion. And apparently there were discounts around DC for badge holders, and Otakon was like, yeah, why didn't you guys take advantage of them? I was like, who the hell knew about them?
I didn't because I went to Nando's one time and then I only found out when we looked, oh, I could have gotten a discount. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and like Nando's had a
A
like
special
they
late night.
yeah menu just for Otakon, and like that was on the Twitter I think, but yeah, and like none of the discounts weren't in the newsletter, which seems like the most obvious place to put it. So and then I was like, well, what were they? And I tried to Google it, and it just took me like a 404 page on Otakon. So I'm like, was there any discounts? I don't know. So they definitely need to do better because I think people would definitely use it.
So many of the con kids are con kids, and thereby, like, anything, like, they'll, like, usually, if they, they're like, well, if I just get this, bag of Cheetos, like, there's so many infamous stories of kids skimping on meals, so, they might actually get a real full meal if it's at a discount.
And one other thing someone asked about, which I wasn't totally clear on how it would work, but Oticon said they have been considering it, which was like to have sort of a membership that exists for the rest of the year. So like if you were a member, an Oticon member, that would include like your ticket to Otakon, but then there would be like other things throughout the year that you could participate in or something. I don't know. They were like calling it like Club Otakon, and it wasn't something that they've established, but somebody asked about doing something like that, and they had said, like, yeah, we're looking into doing something. So, like, depending, obviously, they didn't like talk about numbers of like how much that would cost, but thought that was an interesting idea. Yeah, so I like generous and thought and good suggestions from con feedback. So
Wonderful nuggets.
yeah. And I think the last thing from the end of the con was next year's theme is time skip. And like that's I feel like that's very clever, although everyone was then joking that like this year was the time skip because like literally, a friend of ours, we saw them for the first time at Otakon that we haven't seen them in 2 years, and they had like really long hair versus like having short hair. So it was like literally like, no, this is the time skip moment. But anyway, it's still clever and a fun idea to do for the theme next year.
And plus, as always, if your panel is is thematically appropriate to the Oticon theme, they've always said that you have a much better shot at getting your panel accepted.
Now I'll have to think about if we can come up with something to do with that. Okay, to finish out Otakon, what was the best thing you ate?
So definitely the best thing that I ate is we went to this place called Farmers and Distillers, and they had this creme brulee croissant donut. Ah, beautiful. Just like this beautiful glassy, just sweet creme brulee top, and then the cream in the middle was just very good. And then like the donut, the little croissant donut, like pulled it all together. Because I know you weren't a fan. They weren't bad, but you weren't like thrilled with their regular donuts. Bah, their croissant donuts though. Ah, so nice. So I had like one with like a dessert for the first. Well, actually, I ate it for breakfast the next day, and then I had one other day. I got a croissant donut for breakfast. But I ate some other good stuff. But that was. Oh, it's so good!
I think, yeah, DC is still so new that I don't have like a lot of established places, so we're still like exploring, trying things out. We're going back to places that we went to like a couple years ago, you know, so always open to suggestions as long as they're walkable from the area, because I've gotten a lot of suggestions of like stuff that's a little bit out of the range. And I just don't have enough time and energy to like do that. So yeah, but I like getting to explore food in a new place. It's very exciting.
What was your favorite?
I was really glad to go back to Sundevich sandwich shop. I feel like I'm surprised they're not busier during the con, and I feel like people don't know about them, and now I don't really want people to know about them because they're not that busy.
Well, the problem is they're in like that little like alleyway.
That is the good thing, is that they're slightly hidden because they're very close to the con center, especially if you take one of the back exits, you can get there pretty quickly. But yeah, I like went there twice, you know, took one on the road to get back home. It was so good, and I want to try like so many other sandwiches there. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I had a very good bulgogi beef on the way home. The soul sandwich.
Yeah, I also like that, like, they're all themed about different, like, cities in the world. So, that was Otakon 2021. I feel like I was just so, I was so happy to be there. I was so happy to see everybody. And that was really what was the most special this year, I think, was just having it, like having the moment of it. You know, I think as far as like the content and stuff, I feel like was, you know, it's like a middle year for me, but it still felt so special. And I know at the beginning of the podcast, I said, you know, how my feelings of trepidation about it and whether or not it was a great idea to go or not. I mean, it worked out fine for us, but I'm so glad I was able to go. I'm so glad.
I'd say my hear the whole thing out, because I think it might come off a little harsh at first, but I feel like it was making the best of a bad situation. That kind of almost seemed like the theme of the year, and like it was definitely not Otakon at its peak, but it was definitely probably one of the better Otakons you could get out of the situation that they were in. Like, I think they did a very good job of realizing that they couldn't be the Otakon they wanted to be, so they did the best they can to be the Otakon they could be. And I was very impressed by that because, you know, there was just things they couldn't do or things that they couldn't do the way they normally would all out. And so I'm very impressed by how the staff was able to make do what they could with what they were given. Just the time constraints, the health constraints, just the situational restraints, which were all, each one of those definitely made the con going off at all or well a challenge, and I think they did a really good job given the situation.
Yeah, I mean, any complaints, like I said, it's kind of at the con feedback. It was like, any complaints I have, like, I don't really want to voice them too much. Like, you guys did everything that you probably could have done, and like it came out way better than probably anyone was kind of expecting on such a short notice. And there was great moments. There was this, and like, it's not necessarily, like you said, out peak Otakon, but this, if this was like any other convention, like, that's, they did a lot. And so, you know, I think we're spoiled by Otakon's dedication to its fans and spending the whole year planning this con for us. And, you know, I can't wait to see what they do next year. And, you know, we've been pretty assured that through donations and through the attendance numbers this year, that Otakon is safe, that it will be back. And, you know, that was something that I think I was definitely worried about in 2020, and a lot of people were, that like, that we would, that COVID, that Otakon would be a victim of COVID, and that like it would not return. And to have that not be the case, I think feels really good in this moment.
Kenjiro Hata, Otakon 2022.
Takehiro Sakurai, Otakon 2022.
Cool.